Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Later this hour, we will meet Gideon Kidd. He is the 9-year-old behind the Twitter phenomenon at I've Pet That Dog. I've also brought a couple of dogs to work today for him to pet. You can see pictures on Twitter at Charity Nebbe. But first, a 6-month journey down the Mississippi River in a kayak was not high on Barb Geiger's list of things she wanted to do. But one Sunday morning, that changed. Barb and her husband Gene readied their home-built kayak for an epic journey of paddling and service work. Barb has written about the journey in her new book, Paddle with a Purpose, and Barb and Gene are both here with me today. They drove in from Waukesha, Wisconsin. Hello.
Hi, Charity.
Hi. Thank you for having us.
Well, thank you so much for being here today. And they will be at River Lights Bookstore in Dubuque tomorrow at 5:30 with a reading starting at 6 o'clock. And let's start with the boat, because building a kayak is not something everyone does. And Barb, this was a project that you started before you even met Gene. Tell me about this kayak. Where did this idea for building one come from?
Thank you. It all started with my dad, actually. He was a sailor and loved wooden boats and had lots of wooden boat magazines that were coming to his house. One time when I was up there after he had had a stroke and was in a wheelchair, he was still thumbing through those magazines, dreaming about building a boat. But he decided he probably would never be able to do that. So I suggested that we do a 3-generation project with my dad and myself and my son. And so we ordered a kit and we started building together. But he was in a different town than I was, so I had to build a little tiny bit at a time every time I went up to visit him and brought my son with me.
All right. And how old was your son when this project started?
Oh, gosh. I think he was probably about 9 or 10, about Gideon's age.
Right. So when you started working on this boat, this was obviously a way to connect with your dad, a way to help your son connect with your dad. What was your vision for the future as you were building this kayak?
That's a great question. My vision was that I would probably be using it with my son in lakes around where we lived and then pass it on to him as he got older and was able to use it with his friends.
All right. Now, this project went on for a long time. How many years did you actually end up spending building this kayak?
Well, I think you're right. I think it was a little bit more than 10.
Okay.
But we weren't building it all the time. I took some time off when my dad got sick. I took some time off when I met Gene. Gene came up and helped us with the boat a little bit, but we obviously did other things too when we were dating and enjoyed other activities and hobbies. So it was one of many hobbies. And then when Dad got too sick to work on it, then we brought it down to Waukesha and it became one of our main hobbies. We finished it up together then.
Did you ever have a point where you think, we're never going to finish this boat?
Constantly. Constantly. But it really didn't matter how long it took. It was the process. It was doing it together that was important.
Well, and Gene, you came into this project a little later on, became obviously a very important part of the project. Had you ever done anything like this before?
Oh, heavens no. Actually, I've always loved water. I'm kind of a dreamer, so I've always dreamt of doing some pretty exotic, weird things. But started dating Barbara, and I think the second date we were on or something, she goes, we were at a boat show in Milwaukee, and she goes, did you know I'm building a boat? And it just about floored me. I'm like, what? So that was pretty cool. And then I think the hull was put together, but that was about all. Nothing else was done. It was still raw wood, and so I helped.
Tell me, how do you build a kayak?
Very slowly and carefully.
Right.
We used a kit from Pygmy Boats called the Osprey Double. So it comes with all the slats already cut, but they're in 8-foot and 4-foot sections. So you need to measure on a table and then glue all of the slats together. And then you drill holes in each of the sides of each slat and wire them and glue them together.
All right. And a long, slow process. Mm-hmm. And it's very important to take a lot of time with each step along the way.
Absolutely. It's got to be, the lines have to be plumb and true, or the boat's not going to track straight. It's going to curve all over the lake on you. So, yeah, it's a pretty careful process to get it right.
When you spent a decade building this boat and finally finished it, did you have confidence that it was going to be plumb and true?
We were hoping it was going to float. When we first put it in off of a friend's pier, that was the first comment Barbara made. She goes, "It floats."
I did. But then we got in it and we tried it out, and I was very pleased. It was delightful to paddle. It certainly went straight and true.
So there was this little jump that Gene took right after you put that boat in for the first time and found that you really enjoyed paddling it. Almost immediately, Gene, you said, "Hey, we should take this all the way down the length of the Mississippi River." So where did that idea come from?
Oh, like I said, I've always been a dreamer, and I just thought it was an epic boat. It's 20 feet long and only 30 inches wide, so it's just beautiful, streamlined, just wood grain. It's a beautiful boat. So we thought, wow, epic boat. It needs an epic journey. And I was all game for it. I thought, it's all downhill, right? It's all downstream, so it shouldn't be a problem.
Well, and Barb, you were a little less enthusiastic, and you didn't quash this idea right away, but you were kind of hoping it would just wither and die on its own?
I'm the realist of the two of us. Absolutely. Yes. And when he said, "Let's do the Mississippi," I thought about the length of the Mississippi and the time. And every time I went in my house, I thought, I'm not going to have a house for 6 months to be in when it rains and when it thunders. Every time we went outside and I was swatting mosquitoes, I thought, I'm not going to have a house to go into and get away from this. So I thought more realistically about it. I also considered the fact that we had not practiced for more than a mile or two, and we were considering doing over 2,000. So I was a little less enthusiastic, shall we say?
Until one Sunday morning when mm-hmm. the two of you were in church, mm-hmm. and suddenly things changed for you. Tell me what happened.
It did change. The pastor was giving a sermon about love and about love being a verb and about having to actually show people love instead of tell people love. And some of the ways that we can show love with each other is by volunteering, by helping each other. And I got a message that we could put service with the trip and we could make it into a service trip, and it could be about showing love to other people through volunteering. And so I sat with that idea for a while. I knew that it wasn't mine because I wouldn't think that. I certainly wouldn't apply it to a six-month trip down a river. But
considering you didn't want to go in the first place. Right. Yeah.
When I got home, before I said anything to Gene about it, he came into the room where I was working, and he asked how long I wanted to take on the river. And he had gotten an idea in church that we could put service with the trip and take longer, and we could make it into something that was about people, not about adventure.
So you both had the same idea at the same time?
We did. Mm-hmm. And when we realized it, we looked at each other and thought, we don't really have a choice. We have to see where this goes. And something interesting that happened to me was that my heart changed. Instead of being worried, I was no longer worried. I knew that it would be fine and wanted to do it. And so with that, we started to plan.
Now, you had to plan for the trip, the paddling part of it, the camping part of it, the mm-hmm. eating part of it. You spent a lot of time dehydrating foods and even practicing rehydrating foods to see what you could eat along the way. But then you also, the service was now the most important part of the trip for you. How did you connect with nonprofit organizations that you may be able to help when you're on this journey?
That was actually very exciting and fun. We used the internet and we looked at each area, at each town along the river from where we were going to start on down, probably about for the first 2 months of the voyage. And we looked at towns that were walkable distance from the river because we had no transportation other than a boat. And we looked for people's websites that showed organizations that we thought would be interesting to work with, would be able to blog about and share with others.
And were there any qualifications that those nonprofits had to meet to sort of pique your interest?
No. Something that touched our hearts. We wanted to have a variety, but we really wanted to just let the trip develop and see what happened and see what touched our hearts.
And whoever he put in front of us. It was God's trip, and we were just his hands and feet. And we prayed daily that whoever he wanted us to help or he wanted us to meet, he would make sure it happened.
And sometimes certain nonprofit organizations or certain people that we emailed would send our email on to someone else who would end up writing to us and saying, I hear you're looking for a place to work. We're not really close to the river, but we'd love to send someone to pick you up and have you here to see what we do. And then we made arrangements with them to do that.
So the dots started to get connected.
Mm-hmm.
You're also... You had just retired, Barb.
Yes.
You're not spring chickens.
No. Thank you.
But, I mean, physically preparing for this kind of journey, that I think would be daunting at any age. How did you physically prepare yourselves to be able to paddle all the way down the Mississippi?
We had started. We thought we'd, wow, you know, I mean— I shaved my gray beard this morning, so we got to thinking about, well, maybe we should work out a little bit. So we bought a pretty intense exercise program, and we tried that. But it turned out that we actually caused more damage than we ended up with tendonitis.
You almost immediately injure yourselves.
Absolutely. So yeah, I think most of our training was the first 3 weeks, 4 weeks that we paddled.
Sure. Well, in just a moment, we will talk about those first 3 or 4 weeks that you paddled and the rest of your journey down the Mississippi. We're going to take a short break. We'll be right back. I'm talking with Barb and Jean Geiger. Back in the summer and early fall of 2013, they paddled their homemade kayak all the way down the Mississippi River and did service projects along the way. Barb has written about that journey in the new book, Paddle with a Purpose, and Barb and Jean will be at River Lights Bookstore in Dubuque tomorrow at 5:30. They'll be doing a reading at 6 o'clock. We'll be back in just a moment. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio.
Support for IPR and this podcast comes from Dr. Suzanne Stock, board-certified specialist in orthodontics. Dr. Stock is pleased to provide braces and Invisalign for children, teens, and adults in Iowa City and across Southeast Iowa. More online at drssortho.com.
It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. Coming up in about 15 minutes, I will talk with Gideon Kidd. He is the 9-year-old behind the Twitter phenomenon at I've Pet That Dog. And I also have a couple of dogs at work with me today that he's going to pet as we chat. That's coming up in a little while. But right now, I'm talking to Barb and Jean Geiger. Barb has just written a book called Paddle for a Purpose, and it recounts the journey that she and Jean took down the Mississippi River in their homemade kayak in the summer and early autumn of 2013. They're going to be at River Lights Bookstore in Dubuque tomorrow at 5:30 with a reading at 6 o'clock. And we were just talking about all of the preparations that you did for this journey, setting up your service trip, setting up all of these connections with these towns along the way, carefully plotting the journey to make sure you hit the towns at the right times, having your sons send you boxes of food to pick up at different locations, practicing dehydrating food and all of the things. So you get up to the headwaters of the Mississippi River, and you left on June 1st, right?
We did.
And that year, 2013, 2012 had been very hot and very dry. 2013, it stayed pretty cold a really long time. So you were actually worried about the ice being gone when you first set out, right?
Yeah, the snow melt and ice melt raised the water levels to record highs.
Wow. All right. So what was it like to launch in the headwaters of the Mississippi River? Tell me about that experience.
I thought when we picked the date that it would be a little bit warmer, and I thought it would be a little bit drier. We ended up launching on a day that was in the 50s, probably low 50s, and drizzly with cold rain. But we were still excited because we knew that every day wouldn't be like that. The ranger said that the water was high, but that we should have no problem getting under bridges, which turned out to be wrong.
Right. Because... So there was like, it's a pedestrian bridge that goes across the headwaters, right?
In the park, yes.
All right. So you have paddled hardly at all.
100 yards.
100 yards.
10 you've minutes just started, into the trip.
And there's this bridge, and you see it coming. And Barb, you lean down, right?
I leaned backwards to get under it, and I passed under the timbers of the bridge with no problem at all.
Right. And Gene, what did you do?
I took the bridge right at the chin.
Oh.
I could not get back far enough. I'm holding us from going any further in the current, and I could not bend backwards, so I had to lean to the left. I leaned to the right.
And anyone who's ever been in a kayak knows that leaning is not the best
not
way.
Not the best way to do it. Now in hindsight, and better communication, if she'd have leaned left and I leaned right, we'd have been okay. But Barbara was under the bridge just coming out the other side, thought everything was fine. And the next thing she knew, she was in the water. We were both waist deep, and all our gear was floating down the river. And
so you'd been in the boat for 10 minutes.
10 minutes.
The water was, what, 35
degrees?
35 degrees. It was 50 degrees out. Your son was on the pedestrian bridge taking pictures of
you. He was documenting, yes, this epic adventure, and ended up with a picture of us in the middle of the turn. In the middle of our capsize.
Wow. So you have to collect all of your things that are starting to float away and get the boat to the shore.
Mm-hmm.
What was going through your mind at that moment?
We were laughing. I thought it was funny. I was just surprised that this was the start to our epic, what we thought was going to be a six-month journey that we had planned for a year. And it starts out like that.
It definitely lifted the spirits a little bit.
Really?
Not so serious anymore, that's for sure.
So no despair there of
no,
if we can't
no.
make it 10 minutes, no, maybe this
that,
isn't.
That came about 3 days later.
Well, let's talk about those early days on the water. So once you got things put back together and you did not change into dry clothes, so it was a long, wet, chilly day that first day.
Mm-hmm.
But as you were going along, what do you think you learned about paddling and about what this journey was really going to be like?
I think by having a hard start with rain, 7 out of the first 10 days, with 2 capsizes and putting a hole in our boat in the rapids and having to get out of the water and fix it, we learned that the trip wasn't really about the boat. The trip wasn't really about the river, even though that was a hook that got people interested in following us. And it was fun. It was an amazing adventure for us. But the trip was really about the people. We started meeting people after about 3 days who were doing things in cities all the way down the Mississippi River. And they were doing things to help other people. And that became the story. Meeting these people, working with them, blogging about what they did, having people talk to other people, all the connections. When we would go to a campground, we would meet someone who would tell us about a service that would really be a good one for us to meet, and we would call them and they would welcome us with open arms.
And I was really struck by the incredible generosity of the people that you met. Of course, you were serving others and giving, but the way that other people reached out to you. And let's talk about putting that hole in your boat, because that seems like a very low point.
It was the low point for me.
In a matter of just 30 seconds, we realized we were sinking. We had to find a shore fast. We're in the middle of a rapids with rocks around us, but we did manage to get over to by a bridge to a highway where there was at least a grassy shore. The people that we met that helped us along the way, it was in a matter of no time, we dubbed them as our river angels, that they people would come to the rescue every time we needed help, and very generous people.
Well, just to give us an idea, very generous is kind of an understatement. Tell us about the man who helped you out with that hole in your boat. And not just him, but his entire family helped you out with that. Tell me the story.
His name was Jason. We met him when we volunteered with Fishing Has No Boundaries in Bemidji. And he was, at that time, the boyfriend of the woman who we were working with who volunteered for the organization, as did he. And he drove us around and took us to the places we needed to be. So we got to know him. When we put the hole in the boat, we were despondent on the side of the river, watching the river go by, wishing that we were still on it and knowing that we wouldn't be. We were trying to find a place where we could get the boat fixed. And he was the only one in my phone that I could call. We thought of him immediately. So we gave him a call and he said, "Why do you want someone else to fix it? You built it. Get it over here and I'll help you fix it." And so he came and picked us up, brought us to his grandparents' home, gave us a garage to use, took us to the hardware store, and even helped us with the epoxy and the fixing. And I've learned since then that there are many, many other Jasons and Jenny Lynns with different names all the way down the Mississippi. And I've learned that it is a culture along this river. I've learned an appreciation for the people who live along the river and how much they care about other people.
You wrote that interacting with these people that you called your river angels really changed you and made you think about how you want to live. Mm-hmm. How do you think it changed you?
After almost every interaction with people, Jean and I would get back in the boat and we'd be leaving town. And one of us would say to the other, "I need to remember this when I get home because I want to be this kind of person. I want to be the kind of person that helps others when they're in need. I want to open my house to others. I want to show love to them," you know, without first thinking about safety and thinking about convenience.
It's not just the people that helped us. It's the hundreds of people we met that help their communities and their locals.
Yes.
By food pantries, homeless shelters, Habitat for Humanities. So many volunteers out there that really they're the heroes. We're not. We just paddled in, helped for a day, maybe two, and then we were back on the river again. But they do that every day. And they all give of themselves every day for their community. There are thousands of people all over this country that do that every single day, and they're the heroes.
Let's hit a couple of the highlights of the service organizations you worked for. I know you're going to be back in Dubuque tomorrow, and you're going to revisit the Open Closet, which was an organization that you worked at for a brief period as you were passing through the state. I mean, tell me about that experience and why it was powerful.
Oh, gosh. It was powerful for so many reasons. One reason is that we learned several lessons. One person who was in charge when we were there kept reminding us as volunteers that we needed to serve joyfully. And that stuck with me, that serving joyfully is really honoring the people that you serve, and it's honoring the reason that you serve, and it's honoring God. And so that stuck with me from the Open Closet. Mm-hmm. It also was very important to me because a friend from my hometown who had visited us on the river in Wabasha came back. She drove all the way back from Waukesha to Dubuque because she wanted to serve with us. She said, "I don't just want to watch your trip. I want to be a part of your trip, and I want to be a part of the service journey." So she brought bags of her own clothing to donate, and she came and she worked with us on Saturday morning. And that meant a lot to me as well.
Yeah.
Do you have another nonprofit, Gene? Is there one that really stands out in your mind?
Oh,
I know
my.
That there were so many.
Yeah, there were so many. We did 24 different projects, and we tried to do a nice variety of many, many of them. I have not a fear, but an aversion for dogs. And I understand you have some coming here in the studio in a little bit. But we worked at a homeless
animal shelter,
but it's a no-kill animal shelter. And there was one dog that was being adopted, but it needed to be cleaned up. And so even with my fear of dogs, I bathed and prepared a pit bull for adoption. And Barbara took pictures of it. My mom couldn't believe I was touching a dog. So it was really just overcoming that fear that I had was just part of my growing from this experience.
As you were making your way down the river, you made a lot of friends, talked to a lot of people, and you were looking ahead and realizing just how the character of the river changes dramatically as it goes south. I mean, you started encountering barges before you made it into Iowa, but in Iowa, more barges. Mm-hmm. The further south you go, so much more traffic on this river. And you started to have doubts about actually being able to kayak and feeling safe kayaking.
It became a safety issue because, see, our kayak is 20 feet long. And in order to steer it, it has a rudder, which means you have to go faster than the water current in order for the rudder to be effective. And the further south you go, you start talking some pretty serious currents in the Mississippi. And that was becoming an issue that maybe if we did get in front of a barge, we couldn't steer to get out of the way. Also, many of the services that we wanted to do on the lower Mississippi have moved away from the banks because of flooding issues, because of the high industry. We were running out of options of places to volunteer. And we just, time and time again, we were told, get off the Mississippi, go up to the Tennessee River, which meant going up Ohio, going up the Tennessee through Lake Kentucky, and go down the Tombigbee to Mobile instead of New Orleans, because there's going to be a lot more service organizations and a lot more towns on that Tombigbee River.
Now let's talk about going up a river. You had been going down a river, which is hard enough, and then you turn and you're paddling against the current, and your speed has slowed dramatically. Barb, you write about how every time you take a break from paddling, you realize that gene paddling alone is actually losing ground. So you're going backward.
Yes.
Did you, once you made that decision?
We realized watching the trees on the shoreline that we could have got out and walked faster than we were paddling. It was that hard of work.
Did you feel like giving up at that point?
We knew there was an end to it. It was just, we had about 60 miles we had to get through up the current. The biggest problem we had there were the two dams are very old style. They're called wicket dams. And because of the large volume of industrial traffic on the river, we weren't allowed to lock through. So we had to literally unload our boat, drop it over the side of the concrete dam, and then reload it up on the other side. And we had to do that a couple of times going up that river. But
You made it to your destination, and you had a lot of adventures along the way and a lot of help along the way. And people can read the book, Paddle for a Purpose, if they want to find out the details of that journey. But when you actually made it to the Gulf of Mexico, how did that feel?
Oh, my.
It felt wonderful. We had so many aspirations of going to New Orleans and getting to the Gulf that way. But going the opposite direction gave us a chance to meet new people that we wouldn't have wanted to miss. When we finally got to the Gulf, we ended up depending on a river angel to help us get there because the
marshes and swamps
surrounding was pretty swampy and we weren't able to find places to camp. So we ended up then going to the Gulf and taking a victory lap.
Right.
And it felt really good.
Yeah.
We were glad that we had finally made it and eager to get home and apply what we've learned.
Let's talk about that because it's been 5 years and you've written a beautiful book that tells the story. And
Thank
I'm sure you spent a lot of time in the last 5 years working on that.
10 drafts.
But how did this journey change you?
I think as far as faith goes, the journey made me much more trusting and much more aware of watching and listening for God's direction in my life. And I think as far as community goes, it made me want to be a better person and want to encourage people and motivate people and provide some inspiration, because inspiration is sometimes hard to find right now when you listen to the news or when you look around us in the world. But in our own communities, each one of us can make a difference. And we saw people, single people with a great idea of how to help others, truly making a difference everywhere we went.
Jean, you have anything to add?
Just that there are so many projects and so many things within your community. You actually can't say yes to everything. You need to follow your heart, what's important and passionate to you. Even if it's just writing checks, if that's all you have at that time, you don't have the time and the ability to devote the time, just writing a check is a huge difference to so many community projects, especially nowadays in the political environment. They're losing their funding, and it's becoming very, very hardcore to keep some of these open and running.
And have you spent a lot of time paddling since then?
We refinished the boat.
Nice.
We had a big patch on the bottom of it somehow that we had to take off and refinish.
And a whole lot of scratches and cuts.
Right.
And it took a whole new sanding and finishing it.
But we have enjoyed bringing it back for paddling on the Mississippi.
Good. Well, thank you both so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity, for having
us.
Barb and Jean Geiger. Barb has just written about their journey down the Mississippi River. The book is called Paddle for a Purpose. They'll be at River Lights Bookstore in Dubuque tomorrow at 5:30. This is Talk of Iowa.